Hello, welcome to Books in the Biz, a podcast that looks at both the financial and operational sides of success. Please welcome our hosts, Dan Paulson and Richard Veltre. Dan is the CEO of Envision Development International, and he works with leaders to increase sales and profits through great cultures with solid operations. Rich is CEO of the Veltre Group and a financial strategist working with companies to manage their money more effectively. Now on to the podcast.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Books in the Biz. I am back here with my good friend, Rich Veltre. Rich, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fabulous. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. It is a beautiful sunny day in Wisconsin. It is about 50 degrees, so it's starting to feel more like fall. But hey, you know, life is good. Life is good. So anyway, I approached you about something. I tend to kind of watch YouTube videos or at least have them play in the background when I'm doing some other work and not talking to people. And of course, you see things pop up on your feed. And I don't think you are that familiar with this person, but so TimCast. Tim Pool is somebody who, from what I know of his history, started kind of in the skateboarding and doing videos, then got kind of into more or less doing news stories, articles. I think he worked for Vice at one point, then launched his own kind of news video cast, podcast type thing. He's got a couple different channels. But anyway, I'll pull this up here so our listeners who are on YouTube can see this. Let me get that. Share it. All right. So you can see here, this is just his channel. I would play it, but unfortunately, we are not tech savvy enough, or at least I am not tech savvy enough to have it play and actually have the audio feed through the feed through everything here. So you have to apologize with me for that. But we'll definitely post the link to the URL. But basically, it says this may be my last TimCast IRL. And I'm doing some other work. And I figure, okay, you know, is this just something to get me to bite? And I said, well, I'll just have it play in the background. And I listened to it. Now, keep in mind, this guy has a couple different channels. I think his main channel has about 5 million people. TimCast IRL is a different channel of that. He does different commentary on there. And there, it's got listed here. It's got about 2.1 million people. So this guy's relatively well known. I think he's got a few more viewers than our podcast, Rich, maybe by one or two, but we're pretty close. And you listen to what he's saying. And what he's saying is pretty much what we've been saying for probably better than last year. Yeah. Now, you had a chance to listen to it. What was your take?
Well, it was definitely interesting. There were comments about work-life balance. There were comments about trying to scale when you're sort of alone, mm-hmm. Which is every founder's, you know, sort of dilemma to start, right?
Yes.
You're a lone wolf. And so even though he had built a team, he at times felt like a lone wolf because things were not getting done because he, you know, everybody expected, well, you're the leader.
Yes. So,
you know, you kind of do everything. And he's like, I don't want to do everything, you know? So I think there was a bit of that, you know, work-life balance and trying to understand, you know, how do you scale and what, you know, and what makes sense. So his thought was maybe there were too many projects, cut it down to the one that, you know, would be still profitable, would still give him an outlet, and wouldn't require as much infrastructure. It wouldn't require as much background. So I'm not trying to tell everybody, here's my book review.
But that is kind of your book review.
But I mean, these are the reason I brought those specific topics up were those are the things that kind of resonated to, okay, so this is a podcast, but it's a business. It's a parallel to everybody else's business. It's a parallel to something that could happen to anybody who's listening to this podcast, who's trying to scale their business or grow their business or understand the intertwining between operations and finance. You know, he was hitting all of it.
Yeah. And here's what was interesting to me about it. And this is, these are the common themes that I hear. I don't know if you hear them as much, but because I tend to be more on the op side of things, you know, you've got an owner. He started something, he grew something, he started getting employees. He expected those employees to do specific tasks related to his business. They did some of it, but they didn't all do all of it, or they didn't do it to the quality that he expected, or he didn't, or they didn't do it to the degree of follow-up that they needed to. And now he's sitting here trying to keep the machine going. Everyone's looking at him because they're collecting their paycheck off of this, but they're not taking any ownership in it.
Right.
And that to me is the biggest thing I hear from multiple businesses. I had a conversation with the business earlier this week. You know, Gal had created something that was pretty profitable. It was growing, but a lot of it was centered around her. And she had employees that are expected to do tasks and expected to do work. And that work, you know, feeds into the financial machine. And they've got their own priorities. They got their own demands. It's like, well, you know, this is my business. This is your business. And you make all this money. So why should I work any harder? And I hate to stereotype themes like that, but more and more right now, I seem to be hearing the same thing from other business owners. And they all struggle with how to deal with that. Many of them are getting to the age where they want to step back. I mean, I think Tim's probably in his 30s. Yeah. You know, he's a YouTube guy, so they tend to, you know, target younger when you look at that. So he's built something up over the last 10 years or so and created something that's pretty profitable. And now he's thinking about scaling it back because he doesn't want the headache. And to be honest, by the time we're recording this, I believe he has announced that this podcast will continue on, but he's restructuring it to streamline it a little bit more. So, I mean, that probably means certain people are going to lose his job. Yeah. He was also talking about, you know, he had employees. Well, the employees would take equipment home. They would take stuff. And I think what disturbed me about all that is he's like, well, that just kind of happens. And yeah, to a certain degree, but it's not that common. You know, unless you're a rather large organization where people somehow think they're entitled or they're owed. And I don't believe he has hundreds of employees. I think he has maybe tens of employees. So you look at that and you go, how much of this is owner mindset?
Yeah. Policies.
You know, policies.
I've seen companies that, you know, let's take it a different step, right? Contractor says to one of the employees, oh, well, you know, you could take our truck home.
Mm-hmm.
You could drive it home at night, you know, thinking to a certain extent, like the owner, you know, it's a driving billboard. It's going down the highway.
Right.
You know? But then, you know, somebody like me is looking at it going, the guy lives 100 miles away. You know?
And he likes to go to the bar after work and drink a case of beer and then drive home.
So, you know, so you got that liability problem. Then on top of that, you got 200 miles that you're paying the gas because he's going to use the gas card on his miles home and his miles back. And then this isn't a temporary thing. This isn't, well, the guy didn't have a car, so we let him go for a couple of days. This was like, you know, keep going. This was like part of his deal became, I'm taking the truck home. And, you know, there's other reasons to look for things to say, you know, being someone's friend isn't necessarily how the boss should be.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the boss can be a nice guy. The boss can be, but there's a common, you know, there's a common goal. And the goal is to get to the end of the point where everybody makes money. And that's how you get a paycheck. It's not, you know, well, you know, the owner makes plenty of money. Why am I worried about him?
Exactly.
Okay. But that's the mentality that comes out of when you're too nice of a guy, you know, or when you're too lax on your policies.
Well, and this is kind of leadership. How do I want to say it? It's, you weren't put in this role. It just kind of happened. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like those business owners by accident. You know, in his case, because again, it's social media and everything, he started doing videos. The videos took off. He built a reputation. He built an audience. It grew. And that was successful. You know, how does that relate to a plumber, a contractor, a manufacturer that started something in their garage with one truck, and then over 5 years, they're adding employees. Now they have a fleet, and all that changes. It's not necessarily that they looked at becoming a leader. Mm-hmm. They looked at building a business, and then the business actually was successful. So it's kind of like success in spite of yourself. And all of a sudden, you're thrust into a position now where you have to do things that are more corporate. So one of the things that Tim had mentioned in his podcast as he was lamenting about his situation is like, well, you know, we've talked about getting investors, or we talked about doing this or talked about doing that, but then it starts feeling corporate and it takes away the fun that, you know, we all start with. And I know you've done enough stuff with startup businesses. That's kind of their shtick. You know, in the beginning, it's like, oh, we're all coming together. We're doing a collective thing. We're all enjoying what we're doing. We have right. this freedom because there aren't a lot of systems or structure in place to try and grow this thing. And then boom, you happen to be one of the lucky ones where it takes off. And now you need that stuff, but you don't have it.
Yeah. I think there are relatively few fun startups that get that get over that wall. You know, they get over
right.
the wall. And they get the money and they're running and everybody's happy and they continue to be, it continues to be a game. It continues to be fun.
Right.
You know, at some point, you know, you wind up with those restrictions because you're going to take someone's money who's going to expect, here's what you're going to do with my money. Even though right. they gave it to you, they consider it still to be their money. The language is key here. When you hear people talk about it, they're like, well, what'd you do with my money?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's still their money in their eyes. They're still looking at it. You now have used it to do something else, and their expectation is that you're going to give them back more money.
Right.
So when you use it to become, you know, a bigger game, they don't usually take kindly to that. Go back and watch any of the movies that have come out now about WeWork.
Okay. Oh, gosh, yeah.
Talk about one of the biggest parties disguised as a corporate entity. I mean, the only thing that I can put on it that actually puts a little bow on it is that the concept was good. The concept was relatively straightforward. You know, some place like New York, where they had the most facilities, it's very expensive to try to get even 1,000 square feet. So if you go into something that allows you to share the space with a lot of other smaller companies like yourself, the concept works. When you add a, you know, Woodstock feeling, you know, required retreat in the summer, you know, that has, you know, barely any food and a whole lot of alcohol. I mean, you know, and then you've got private equity firms and institutional bankers that have invested in you are now looking at this, you know, Woodstock going on. And I have no idea how it went as long as it did. But that's the kind of story you want to go back to and say, you know, there's a point where everything kind of flips and there still has to be that back office. If you right. still want it to be a game and you can still produce, but that back office is built and solid, then I think you actually have something that would be rare. But building that back office and being solid, I think is exactly the thing that this guy didn't want to see. He didn't want that. He didn't want to be part of that. He wanted yeah. to go ride his skateboard and then show up to do his podcast. You know,
yep.
that's all fine. Okay. But even as he said, you need somebody else then to take on the role because you don't want to do it.
And that's the key. I think he's come to the conclusion. He recognizes that. And as you point out, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to put then people and systems in place to allow you to do that, to give you that freedom. So freedom comes with structure. And, you know, you pointed out the WeWork example. I think, you know, when we look at business startups and whether it's a contractor, whether it's a manufacturer, whether it's a company like WeWork, you know, WeWork's one of those examples because it was new and exciting. I think what hides it is they get a lot of good press. You know, we can probably both think of some pretty colossal failures that started out on the right foot. What's the one, the medical one, the blood work one? Theranos. Yep. We talked about her either earlier this year or late last year. Yeah. I mean, she was a darling, and the media propped a lot of it up, and it was all smoke and mirrors. But, you know, for a while, they go and they live high on the hog until they run out of steam. Now, in this particular case, it's not the same thing. I think what we see, you know, with like the Timcast, it's just a larger example of what most small to medium sized businesses face, where when you're early on, there's a lot of freedom to do your job in certain ways because there's no structure yet. And there isn't really enough volume or people that you need that structure. Now you get to a point 3, 5, 7 years down the road, and you're all of a sudden put in this situation where, well, it was fun when we were all creative and whatnot, but now there's certain things happening. There's more mistakes happening, quality's going down, maybe certain service issues are getting missed. Maybe we're losing opportunities because we don't have a way to manage our sales pipeline efficiently. And now you got to put structure in place. Mm-hmm. And then people start looking at it, go, well, this is now becoming too corporate. It's taking all that fun away. I think the evolution of any business, if it's going to be successful long-term, kind of has to move to where there is structure involved. And through that structure, you regain the freedom that you had earlier, because now that there's systems in place, there's efficiencies, there's steps to follow. People know what to do. They're not left to guess. Mm-hmm. And you get that point where you can start stepping back and doing other things or focus on different growth opportunities than you could before.
Right. Yeah, I think it also comes down to the things that you and I have been talking about, which is, you know, you want to be proactive about it, then your proactive part of it has to include some degree of planning around the fact that you understand that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
That, you know, especially if you do have traction and you do feel like you're moving forward and revenue's coming in and things are happening and there's potential investors, you know, you have to include some of the change that's going to happen inside of the, you know, the business climate, the employee climate, everything that actually mm-hmm. is going along with it, like that has a bit of a cost. Like you're going to have to plan for how are you going to arrange for the fact that something's going to change, you know,
right?
Are you reserving a little bit for, we're going to have to do some things for the employees because this is going to get a little stressful. How do we reward them for putting up with it and realizing that, you know, we planned for it all along. You know, mm-hmm. no one likes surprises. So the CEO here doesn't like surprises, but there's probably another side to this story as well. You know, why weren't the employees doing some of the things that he was expecting them to do? Was it lack of communication from him? Was it burnout? Was it, you know, other things that were affecting the employees, or the fact that they were always working with shoddy equipment? And so when the equipment failed, everybody kind of threw their hands up and said, you know, this is a typical day.
Mm-hmm. You
know, he's not talking about that in the podcast.
Well, he does a little bit. I don't think it's necessarily a shoddy equipment issue or that he was shortcutting anything there. There were a couple different things that I kind of caught, and I don't know if he directly said it, but, you know, he's in an industry that attracts a lot of younger people.
Yeah.
And I know this because I have a daughter that's into social media, and they all kind of think they can do this on their own. They can be successful. And it's only really a handful of people that can pull this off. And, right. and one of the things that Tim said was, you know, there's people out there that post videos or do stuff, and they do it once a week. Hello, that would be us, because we got other things to do. But he's 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, posting videos 6 to 10 times a day. How many people are actually going to put forth that effort? But what he's found is, you know, they'll go hire somebody, or they'll reach out to, you know, somebody to come on their team in some way, shape, or form. And a vast majority of them just go, well, why should I do this for you? I can do this for myself.
Right.
And then the people he does get, I think, all kind of have that mindset where, well, you know, I'm helping you grow this thing. What if I want to do my own thing? So there's that whole disconnect of ownership.
Right.
And I actually had the opportunity yesterday. So as the day that we're recording this right now, the day before that, I was at a conference and I was talking about how values impact your bottom line. Richie would have been proud of me. I was talking about accounting stuff without talking about accounting stuff. Almost feel like a politician here. I was kind of relating, well, why do you need values and how does that relate to profit margins and sales and all this other stuff?
Yeah.
And what I see here is kind of, like I said, this is what I hear from a lot of people, clients and anyone else is, you know, they have an idea of what should be done, but they haven't built a value set around their business, nor have they educated their team to that value set.
Right.
And if you don't have values unified throughout the company and throughout the organization, you're not feeding those values constantly, you end up in a situation where everyone kind of works off their own value set.
Right.
So any company will create its own set of values. If you're not curating that, you often get stuff you don't want. And I think this is an example where he would talk about different opportunities. He even talked about where, you know, they would go out and they would essentially partner with other podcasters or other video casters, and they would essentially act as, I'll call it their agent. He didn't use that word, but that's kind of how I interpret it. He'd kind of be their agent and help them grow and get that business thriving. They'd still have to do a lot of the heavy lifting, but through his name recognition and support, they would help them grow their channels. Yeah. And a lot of people just wouldn't see that as an option. So you've got a generation of people here that all think, you know, all this stuff is easy. I don't need the experience. I can just go out and do it. And there's really such a small handful, and this is true in any line of work, that actually become successful at what they do. Because the vast majority of people just don't want to put in that degree of effort to get there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the employee level. It's just, I'm hitting one of those spots where it's just, you know, clicking around. But I think it's relatable. It's really relatable. And I think that's my biggest takeaway, because I had another meeting with someone that was in more of a medical field and multiple locations, and then, you know, is now looking and saying, you know, why is there no money in my pocket? And I'm saying, well, what reports do you get that show how everything's doing? If you have multiple locations, how can you tell me how everything's going?
She's right.
Like, I don't really have anything. I'm like, so you're trying to run a company with 5 locations on gut? Yeah, sort of. Oh boy. So I could probably put her on Tim Cass podcast, and actually they could just, you know, banter back and forth on, you know, what else is something that you kind of have to be prepared for. Cause if you're trying to scale and grow, you know, you're just looking at how do I grow my top line? And I'm saying, it's not the top line you got to worry about. It's the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, and how did you figure out what expenses you have for that bottom line? You know, because you figured out, you know, sort of how to make funds come in, but you know, your cash requirements are way higher than what you're actually bringing in, I think. So now we're trying to figure out, you know, can we get a report?
Mm-hmm.
She was relying on her outside accountant who said you spend too much money. That's the whole advice they got, was that they spend too much money.
Right.
So what's, you know, gut feel, you know, I don't know. You know, it's pretty hard to educate someone who's in the middle of that on, you know, what do I say? Here's what you did wrong. is it wrong? I don't, you know, I mean, I just feel like I'm kind of rambling a little bit here, but you know, there's a big relatability here to how much of what you don't know is what's coming back to bite you. Because, you know, for a long time, you could run along thinking you're making all kinds of money, but if you don't prove it with numbers, you have no proof that what you did was correct.
Well, and to me, this, to kind of bring this back full circle, this is a sign of the lack of experience that's out there. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, maybe we have employees, but they're filling roles that are above their pay grade right now.
Yeah.
They just don't have the tenure or the seasoning that others have that can really kind of look at what's going on, what's wrong with those options. I mean, I'm sure the accountant's right that they spent too much money, but the accountant's probably a tax accountant. He's only looking at the P&Ls and he's not involved in the business. He's not strategizing, well, why do we spend too much money? Yeah. Or how do we get better reports? It's just, you know, this is what it is. You deal with it.
Yeah.
And I see more and more companies that, you know, they struggle to find that help, which is, you know, why we're pushing for what we're doing here is we really need to get that level of experience into the hands of people who maybe can't afford a full-time person to do that. You need to find somebody to help as far as the guidance goes. So that way you do get good reporting. You do build good systems. Unfortunately, you may get a little bit more corporatized in the process, but with that discipline comes more freedom.
Right. I 100% agree with that.
Well, I'm glad you agree. That's good. I would actually love to have Tim Cass come on our show, but we mean nothing. We have our 5 views a month or whatever it is. It's relatively small. I mean, a lot of people listen to us on different channels, but it would be nice to talk with him more about that and understand what kind of challenges he's faced. Because like I said, if you listen to the podcast, it's 2 hours. I don't think you need to listen to the full 2 hours, but you know, within a half hour to 45 minutes, you really get a feel for a lot of very similar themes to what we go through or what business owners go through to try and grow a successful company. And oh my gosh, it is successful. Now what? So it's the whole dog that caught the car situation. Okay, we got there. Now we got all these other issues we need to deal with. What are we going to do about that?
Yep. Totally agree.
Well, if they need help, Tim, if you need help, I've already sent an email. Give me a call should you actually see this. But if anyone else needs help that isn't a podcast host, Rich, how do they get a hold of you?
Best way is by email. Send me an email to rveltri@veltrigroup.com.
Excellent. If you need to get a hold of me right now, you can go to danpaulsonletsgo.com and set up a meeting. We can definitely help you out. If you are feeling the same level of frustrations with your employees, with your systems, with your profitability, with your sales, any of that, we can help address. And next week, Rich, we've got an exciting announcement to make, and I think that's probably going to take up most of our podcast, but we'll keep you hanging for that for at least 7 more days. And if you want to listen to other podcasts here, if you want to catch up on maybe some other things that we've been talking about related to this whole Tim Cass situation, you can check us out at booksinbizletz.com. That is BOOKS. The letter NBIZ.com, and we will see you there. Rich, it's been fun.
Absolutely.
We will let you go, and you can do your accounting stuff, and I will do my business stuff, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks a lot.